Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details. Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
We are so brand safe, you guys. Chelsea Handler just walked out of the store and I really just, first of all, I scarfed down a Joe and the Juice wrap because one thing about me is I am a c*** when I'm hungry, okay? And someone censor that again because we are so brand safe. And I am like Lady Gaga in that sense where Lady Gaga's always saying that quote, you know, she's like, if there are 100 people in the room and they all tell you no, and that's her thing. And I'm always referencing a past version of me. But even just if me sitting on that plane with her would know the way that our relationship would evolve, I think that that girl would have, word to Amaya Love Island, would have been tachycardic, okay? Today I went and did her podcast, Dear Chelsea, and it was amazing. You guys, 100%, if you're intrigued by this episode at all, should go watch that afterwards. It was really good because sometimes I leave a podcast and I'm like, I actually just farted out of my mouth for an hour, but I didn't feel that way today. I got to have such a great conversation with so much substance from my idol. And there is a part of me as well that when I'm sitting there and talking to her, I kind of leave my body and there's almost this feeling of having a conversation with who you want to be. It's funny even just choosing her to be my very first ever guest. You know what I mean? How nerve-wracking, how alarming. But at the same time, to me, it's very poetic because this podcast to me is the start of this new era, letting versions of me die and continuing to grow into new versions of myself. And what better person to usher me into that than a person I have watched have 1,000 rebirths and continue to not only reinvent, but prevail with that reinvention and become better and better versions of herself. But also it's inspiring to a girl like me in a city like this because it's not typical reinvention. You know, she's Chelsea Handler and she says the thing that no one else has the balls to say. And she was the first person to ever teach me that like we as women do not have to shut the up. And especially now in the society that we're in, I think that there is so much of that, so much of society wanting women to shut the fuck up. You know, I was swinging the pendulum too far and I was being a little too dialed back for a second there. I think that I was so chaotic and so drama starting and so unfiltered, but also like, why are you speaking Rubik's Cube for so long that I almost was like, had anxiety and was reverting into this shell. And I'm finally back in this place now where I am at this happy medium where I'm still saying what's on my mind. And she is just a constant reminder of that, that you can run a business and people can take you seriously, even if you have to fight for that. And you can create whatever reality you want all by yourself if you just don't give up. And if you continue to stand up and you can still be an unfiltered woman who says what's on her mind. And even if sometimes you still got to throw a little apology here and there, like that's okay. And that's who I am. And she is such a reminder of that for me. When I found out that I had the opportunity to have her be my first sit down guest on this podcast, I was absolutely elated. And now that she's left, that's what I feel like today's conversation was. It was a conversation with who I want to be in so many ways, minus the alcohol. God, she is so amazing and gorgeous and beautiful and can drink like a normal person. But other than that, it really is. And seeing her shows and just stand up and all of the different things, book writing, all of the different things that she's done that if I can do 1/10 of, I would be so genuinely proud of myself. And it just makes me feel like, you know, we are in the right place and the right time. You're going to see a lot of different looks because these episodes are not in consistent order. Okay, she's bronzed now. Before anyone cancels me, I need to wash off this spray tan so bad. It's a scandalous right now. It just keeps getting darker and I need to go exfoliate. I leave for Las Vegas tonight and I'm sure you guys will actually be getting some episodes from this Vegas trip because I am unbanned from the win and I I am about to do my biggest in Las Vegas and podcast from there for the first time with Amari, with Holly Madison. So many things are coming. I felt like today's episode is a really great one to open this podcast with. Like, while there still will be chaos and hilariousness and giggles and more of my introspective thinking and just, you know, talking about the things that I've learned over the years and stuff, I get to sit down with someone that I truly, truly hope to emulate across my career in so many ways. She went from Jimmy Kimmel last night to doing the Tana Mongeau Brand Safe show today, and it means the world to me, and I just really, really hope you guys enjoy this. This one means so much to me to start this new, different journey, and I hope you guys enjoy. This is one of those moments where I just shut the fuck up and listen as well. I really wanted her advice, to hear what she has to say and to soak up some of that wisdom, and she said so many things across this podcast where I will absolutely never, ever forget them. If you are out there and you are, you know, wanting to reinvent who you are or wanting to strive for the moon, when I say that interviewing Chelsea Handler was something that I just never, ever thought I could do, and so many versions of me would not have been capable of doing. I would have been like, Chelsea, tell me about that. You know, like I had to continue to reinvent to get to this point and have deaths of different versions of who I was. And while I still hold hands with them, they weren't capable of being here. And I want to be that for the girlies. I want to show them that it's never too late to wake up and want to be somebody else. It's never too late to strive for the moon and actually hit, because this is my moon today. So without further ado, please enjoy this conversation with none other than my idol, New York Times bestseller, touring legend, unfiltered legend, television legend. You know, I was 8 years old watching her talk her shit on Chelsea Lately, and I have no idea if I would have become the Eureka anything or who I am today, let alone without her. So, Chelsea Handler. And I'll make sure to have a microphone coming from the ceiling next time, just right in front of you.
Where are you putting the wire?
Big shaft.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Wire, not my problem.
Even more uncomfortable. You're an idiot. Welcome to Brand Safe. We actually need a sponsorship deal from a microphone company.
Yeah, or just even a stand.
Yeah, a microphone stand company.
I was telling you, I'm not a big holder. Like, when it comes to holding things, I just don't think it was my calling.
Not at all my calling. It's just like I can't clean.
I couldn't agree more.
If I see something that's messy or dirty, it's like, if it's messy, it's one thing.
Yes.
But cleaning a stain?
Yes.
No.
How do you, with the, because you're a big dog person, and I just fostered a dog. I failed, and now he's mine. Last night at 1
What do you mean you failed and he's yours? That's
like, it's a foster fail, like when you don't give them back.
I thought that, okay, I didn't know it worked that
way. I know, I kind of agree with that verbiage.
Isn't that the idea, is to foster, to keep?
Yeah, but a lot of people say no, because then you can't continue to foster.
Oh.
I think either way, it's, you're doing a good thing.
Yeah, so you got a new dog, that's great.
Yes, but he pees more than me. It's like, how does this little Chihuahua have so much piss? In, like, when your dogs are peeing, what do you do about it?
In the house?
Yeah, like, your dog pees in the house right now. Who are you calling?
My dog wouldn't do that.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
He did it a couple times in the beginning, but it was never in my house. It was when we took him to different house. Like in Vegas, we were doing my promo shoot for my residency there.
Yeah.
And he went on the bed and peed all over the bed in Vegas in the hotel room. Yes. I was like, welcome to my residency, Cosmo. Like, this is my life. I was like, I also need to borrow $3,000 to gamble.
It's like looking in a crystal ball.
And then he did pee a couple. Like, it's always someone else's problem. Yes. I can't do it. I don't even know how to do it.
I heavily, heavily, heavily relate. The piss is a lot for me right now. But let me do a proper intro, okay, actually, because I'm just talking about piss.
Right.
You're sitting here. Okay. Chelsea Handler, thank you. Chelsea Joy Handler.
The woman you are.
I cannot thank you enough for being my first guest on the Brand Safe podcast.
My pleasure. I'm happy to be here. And always.
It's funny because even right now you were like, there's no stand to the microphone. And today I had this thought where I was like, how stupid of me to start with my idol. Like, maybe interview some influencer that I don't like as much.
Or a Kardashian. Yeah. Or
yes,
you
like
know?
Just pick Courtney.
Yeah, Courtney. Yeah.
Like, Sorry, Courtney. To be in beta still and have Chelsea Handler be sitting here is just so funny to me. It almost feels too easy in the regard that I'm like, what do you mean my very first guest on my podcast is literally my idol just sitting on this couch with me?
And well, that is really sweet and ridiculous. So just let's put that out there. That's my reaction to that, okay?
And to go
first of all, congratulations on your new podcast.
Thank you so much.
And this is your own podcast. This is all you.
It's really great. It's definitely a little more nerve-wracking, like, right. But in a good way, because you care, you know? Yeah. Even this, I've cared so much, and I just, I'm so happy to have you here. I will say, doing your podcast first was the choice. I'm so elated we did that.
Because
even the first 15 minutes of your podcast, I was like having a seizure, and you're like, hey, Tana, like, you're kind of seizing. Like, are you okay? Mm-hmm. Like, what's going on here?
And then you had to pull a scoliosis card.
Yes, and then I said she was offending the whole scoliosis community.
Yeah, so apologies again to the scoliosis community. I didn't know she had scoliosis, and I was wondering why she couldn't sit still.
But also, I was just having a seizure.
She also had like 3 Red Bulls before she got there, so that's
I'm fully
also
speedballing today.
Yeah, exactly.
Like Red
exactly.
Bull, beta blocker,
so let's put
Xanax.
That out there and not blame the scoliosis. Right. Actually, I'm more protective over the scoliosis community at this point than you are.
You're so real for that. In order to see you, I need such a cocktail to get my chemicals right so I can act right. You
tell
know what
your
I mean?
Audience what the cocktail is.
Today, it is a Red Bull, a beta blocker gabapentin, and a little bit of Xanax, okay? Just to, because even the first time that we ever were in the same room, our JetSuite X story, which we were getting today, like I thought I was going to go into cardiac arrest, genuinely seeing you in that airport and losing.
I'm sorry, I'm just trying to get my hand around this shaft in a comfortable way. I mean, honestly, what the fuck is this? What the fuck?
We are so beta. I should have called Courtney. Even that first time, obviously, I eventually decided on that plane. I was like, I'm not in the state to talk to her.
Yeah.
And I'm very glad I did.
I am too, actually.
Yes.
Yeah. Because it's a lot to handle when someone, like fans come up to me all the time, but when they're emotional, it becomes like, then you have to help them deal with their emotions.
Yes.
And you're like, no offense, but I don't even know you. So like, please deal with that. And I'm happy to have an interaction, but I can't emotionally carry you through this if you're emotional about it. So it's much better that we met after.
100%. And then I got to, you know, get it together and you ended up doing canceled. And you do have this beautiful way of the second that like I'm with you, it's like all the nerves they subside. And it just ends up being so fun. We even had a little Vegas rendezvous.
Yeah,
which
we did.
I felt like the Vegas Make-A-Wish child of a century. And it's so funny because I was wearing this skirt that I didn't try on before I got there. My asshole's out. Like, we're in a nice restaurant.
And then she was going to bring her boyfriend to the dinner. We always do a dinner beforehand from before my shows in Vegas. And I was like, oh, okay, are you bringing your boyfriend? She's like, no, I told him to stay home. I'm like, that's another strong move.
Yes.
I liked that.
Yes,
you're
I'm
like,
playing chess
It's not
here.
For him. It's for us.
Yes, yes. No straights around. I had to bring my gay.
Yeah,
and then
yeah.
You were so good to him too. It was just like you were, and to see you in action at the Chelsea is something so special. I tell everyone that they need to see your show there.
Oh,
like it is just
thank
so
you.
Incredible. And then we gambled all night, which is just, I like that you have a gambling problem like me.
Yeah.
Well, would you say it's a problem?
No.
Because I say that it's only a problem if you're losing.
Yeah, I win all the time. And I don't, and I know how to get up. None of the things I do are a problem because I'm not an idiot. Do you know what I mean? And no offense to people that overdo things and have to
no
stop.
No offense to idiots.
And no offense to idiots, but I know when to hold them and I know when to roll them. Is that the saying? No, something
no
like
one
that.
To hold them, no one to fold them.
Fold them, yeah, fold them. Like I know when to get up from a table and walk away. And if I win, I'm never avaricious. Like I don't have to win $20,000. I can just break even. And then I'm like, okay, that was a fun night. I just rented a good time.
I just rented a good time. I'm definitely in the era of gambling where I am chasing the win. Like breaking even is not enough to me.
Oh, okay.
And then I'm like, wait, am I turning into my father? Like the kids aren't going to eat.
The fun thing is that this new guy that I am dating has a gambling problem.
Yes.
And we gamble together all the time, and I love that he does have a gambling problem.
And the way I'm sitting here like goals,
but but I also when I found out he had a gambling problem, I was like turned on. I was like, that's really funny. He just likes to gamble, and he doesn't gamble like crazy amounts of money. I'm like, up it a little bit, that's not enough.
Yes.
And so I love that because he'll call me like whenever I'm on tour, which I am right now. I'll go to different cities and he bets on whatever home team is playing in the city. So like for Cincinnati, we bet on the Cincinnati Reds. For Cleveland or Columbus, we bet on the Columbus Blue Jackets, a hockey team. Like we just find a team that has has a home game and we bet on them. And I love that. Like, yes. That's fun.
Sports betting is also great because you can do it from anywhere. Then you're like somewhere. You're like at a terminal at the airport and you're like, I just won money.
Yeah.
It's nice. But that's the other thing. Now I start getting, I'm at the point where it's like, I want to bet on like throwing spoons.
I'm just going to fix this part of your hair because I don't think you're going to like that. It's just flying up.
I think that I really took it there recently, frying it off.
Oh, did you?
Yes. Yeah, because I had this MAGA lob going on. Like, and I had to fix it. I said, fry my shit.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, today's episode is sponsored by DraftKings Casino. What do you get when you combine bingo-style bonuses and slots? Cashingo. DraftKings Casino is the exclusive place to play Cashingo slots. And listen to this. New casino players can play $5 and get 1,000 flex spins. You can claim 50 spins a day for 20 days on your choice of over 100 slots, including the exclusive Cashingo collection. Download the DraftKings Casino app and sign up with code BRANDSAFE to claim your flex spins and experience Cashingo, the feature you can't play anywhere else. The crown is yours. In partnership with DraftKings Casino, gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. 21 plus. Physically present in Connecticut, Michigan, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, West Virginia only. Void in Ontario. Eligibility restrictions apply. Non-withdrawable spins issued as 50 spins per day for 20 days, valid for select games only, and expire each day after 24 hours. See terms at casino.draftkings.com/promos. Ends July 22nd at 11:59 p.m. Eastern Time. Thank you, DraftKings Casino, for sponsoring today's episode of Brand Safe.
Figure it out. See, because this is a cute bob. I think when you start...
Don't call it a bob.
Women get to... It's so funny because I was the same way. I do get offended. A bob is weirdly offensive.
Yeah, bob. That sounds like I'm going to soccer with my minivan. I don't want a bob. I just want a shoulder length little whoopsie doodle.
Yes. Okay. I love your little whoopsie doodle.
Whoopsie doodle.
But I think that when you start to get to that above nipple territory and it's like not short, but it's not long, that it, and especially if you're blonde, it leans MAGA. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it does. Yes, exactly. But also, like, my hair was long and straight for so long with the middle part. I'm like, I'm so bored with the way I look. Like, I have to change it up. And then my friend came to visit me and she had this cute little kind of much shorter haircut. So I was kind of going for that.
Yeah.
But then I got to my hair salon and he's like, you don't have hair like that. Like, your hair is thin and blonde.
They love to tell me I have four strands to work with.
Yes. And I'm like, all right, well, do the best you can. And I'm like, I've had short hair before and I just, I'm like, it's cute for a minute. And then I'm like, where's my hair? So we did a little bit longer because my hair grows fast. But I mean, I do like, you gotta freshen it up every once in a while.
I agree with that. That's actually like talking about freshening it up and just different eras. I feel like today on your podcast, we were talking about this a lot. And that was what I really wanted to talk to you about today. I feel like I'm in this era where I am starting a new podcast. I'm leaving versions of myself behind. And you are the woman who has had, you've done it all. And you've had so many rebirths. I called Gay McCoa today, who you met in Vegas. It's funny because I never would have said this about you normally, like, but you're like Barbie to us. You're crass Barbie. You talk your shit Barbie, but like Barbie on the moon. Barbie does things. Barbie's here. Barbie's in Uganda. Barbie's like, you've literally done it all. There's been so many different eras of Chelsea. You're even in a new one now. I feel like with I'll Have What She's Having, you were kind of like really focusing on being almost mothering a lot of the younger girls in your life. And becoming a better sister, and becoming a better, I don't know. I wanna hear your advice and your take on the rebirths that you've had.
I think that you have to like just go, and I think that you already are doing this. Like, I think you have to just be really authentic to who you are. You know, if you're in the business of being yourself, which is what you're doing and what I'm doing, then you have to really be honest and truthful about where you are and not misrepresent yourself. And that way you don't get into a lot of trouble because I get away with a lot of things that people would be like, I don't understand how you get away with that. I'm like, because I'm being authentic, like, and I've always been authentic.
Yeah.
I'm not saying things to get a sound bite. It seemed that way in the beginning, but it wasn't. It was just voicing my opinions, which weren't that, you know, common to voice, I guess, you know? So when I wrote a book called My Horizontal Life, nobody had written a book about being promiscuous. Meanwhile, that's what most of girls in their 20s are doing, is having sex with different guys and dating different guys and finding out what you're into. I think it's just really about being authentic to who you are is the best badge of honor and authenticity and trust building between you and your fans. And now, like, as you go through different phases of your life, like your audience doesn't always stay the same. Mm-hmm. Some people are diehards and will ride with you forever, and that's awesome. And some people don't come and find you until later. And some people are over you when you change and you like butterfly or turn into the next version of yourself or however you want to frame it. Obviously, I would never use that phrase like that. I'm turning into a butterfly. I'm good with all the versions of me, and I'm happy about being authentic to who I am and not shying away from it or being scared, or, which I think is the most important aspect, not taking yourself too seriously. It's just life, and it's already harsh. There's so much harshness around us, and while life is big and feels like it's a huge responsibility, you don't have to take your image so seriously. Yeah.
I feel like I had so many eras where I was living with no anxiety, not caring how I was presenting, and almost in this stage of shedding and becoming someone else, it was the first time where I did start to kind of really overthink how I was perceived and get those anxieties and stuff like that. Now I'm trying to swing the pendulum back, I guess, to being not giving a but a little more polished.
Yeah. Yeah. And we were talking about this on my podcast just before or two, which is there is an area of time between the person that you used to be and then the person that you're becoming. Mm. And in that little transition period, it is very unsettling because feelings come up during that transition when you're trying to figure out what the newer, better, more improved version, more mature, more evolved version of yourself is. You do feel self-conscious. I know from my experience, felt self-conscious for the first time in my life in a long time. I spent like 4 years thinking about what I was saying, thinking about how I was coming across, thinking. And I'm like, this sucks.
Yes.
Like this must be what everyone else is feeling like.
When the beta people, blockers.
Yeah. And you kind of have to go, okay. And I'm so glad that I had that period to reflect on. Mm-hmm. I didn't like it, but I'm out of it.
What do you feel like was the like radicalization, the moment, I guess, that brought you out of it? I'm sure it was a culmination of moments, right? But like what changed?
I don't know that it was a moment. That I think it's like everything is just kind of like a wave and you ride it. Sometimes you're feeling like, oh, this sucks. Like you're in a state of your life where it's not great, or you're not feeling like you're at your best, or you're not feeling like you've accomplished some of the things that you want to do. But you have to always remember that those feelings are temporary. Just like success is temporary, those feelings are temporary. So it's like finding the balance of getting through those things and going, oh, maybe this is my time out of the limelight. This is my time to like invest in myself. This is my time to go spend a month somewhere alone. This is my time to not focus on the outside. It's to focus on the inside and to really get down with yourself. You know what I mean? And I spend a lot of time doing that. So now I'm in a place where I'm like, okay, I'm back on track. I'm back to who I am, but recalibrated in a nicer way.
Do you feel like that's the time? Because obviously as I read your books over the years, or like I'm watching you do a set or just whatever it is, I always am so interested. I know that you gather so much of your inspiration just through living and stuff, but is that the time where you're your most creative and you're writing these things and you're doing these things, is in the alone time?
I don't get a ton of alone time, but I want, like, I like alone time.
Yeah.
So like, this is the first year that I had a vacation by myself for 3 weeks at my house in Spain. Yes. Like I went for 3 weeks, nobody was there. Mm-hmm. I didn't drink, I didn't, you know, all I did was work out, eat, read, meditate, and I worked on this, I worked a little bit. And I just had to get refocused because I was just burnt out.
Yeah.
And that's my kind of vibe. I always go hard, really hard, and then I have to like, okay,
me too.
I'm gonna black out. You know what I mean? I'm gonna crash and burn. And that's okay. That's my speed. I have like two speeds, on and off.
I couldn't agree with you more. I'm like hitting the ground running until I physically can't run anymore. And then I kind of like reserve. And it is a great thing. It's so amazing to me though, that you have been touring and doing this for so long. And you found this way to not burn out and this way to keep it going. Do you plan on doing it until you die?
No. I mean, I have a lifestyle that I need to maintain. And I don't mind working. I like working and I like people and I like my fans. So I don't imagine, like I always used to say when I was younger, like there's no way I'm going to be in front of the camera when I'm 40, you know? It's like, well, good luck. I mean, that would have been nice if I could just retire. But I don't even have the mentality for retirement. No, I don't see myself doing this until I'm 75 years old, but who knows?
I would love to see you like wheeled onto a stage.
I know. My brother's like, you know, you can extend your life. There's like this new program where if we all pitch in, we can extend our lives. If you get past the next 10 years of AI and everything that's about to happen, which they've been saying is about to happen for the last 5 years, they said you can like extend your life to live to like 125 years old. And I'm like, I can't afford that. And I don't want to live till I'm 125.
Take me the
workout I've done
enough. My big dry vagina, like, and what? And do stand up? What am I going to do at 125 years old for money?
I live
money?
For my big dry yeah, vagina. Yeah.
What
so
is
real.
That about?
What does a 125-year-old put? Look, we don't want to know.
I don't know. I mean, hopefully they can regenerate that too.
Are you going to be stem selling it and trying, or it's like we're microdosing and we're taking?
I don't know what I'll be doing. I mean, I don't really have a desire to live that long, quite frankly. Like, I mean, if I wouldn't mind some sort of group euthanasia at some point. Just like the way the world is, I don't want to be around for like the seriousness of climate change and the seriousness of the social discord. I wouldn't mind if like somebody said, okay, in 5 years, you have to commit to euthanizing yourself. I'd be like, okay.
And honestly, that could be really fun if we all just got together.
Yeah. You and know then what we mean? Just like have a great big party weekend.
Yes.
And then at the end of it, everyone just takes a sleeping pill and you never wake up.
I honestly, you have such a point. Chelsea Handler for president.
Yeah. Like, definitely.
God, it is so wild just... seeing you in this era of your life, because I feel like I've seen you in every era, and it's just very cool to see how much you've applied all these versions of Chelsea to get to this one.
Yeah, and it's also like important to like, you know, they're not calculated. I've never had a strategy, and many people would say we can tell. You know, like I've been around a lot of people in this business who are strategy oriented. They want a 5-year plan. They're very like meticulous about their career, about how they're perceived, about what people think about them and about how they're presenting themselves. That's never been my vibe. I don't overthink things. I don't care enough. I don't have the attention to myself in that way. Again, it's not taking yourself too seriously, which I think, you know, you and I come together about or a lot on that subject. You know, you seem like someone who doesn't take yourself that seriously. And while certain situations may require seriousness, my image doesn't require my seriousness.
It's just so much more fun that way. Yeah. It's so much more fun that way. You know, at any time in my life where I was holding on to a different version of myself for too long, I can feel that, the disconnect, you know, and just how important it is to remain authentic and say what's on your mind, even if it gets you in trouble and stuff. And I definitely have learned that from you.
Sometimes I'll read a quote from myself, or somebody will like, something will be circulating that I said, or a quote will get picked up and I'm like, oh God, why did I say that? And then I'm like, like, you know, after I hosted the Critics' Choice Awards this year, and after I said something, I was doing some interview and I said something about Timothée Chalamet and how it was pretty hard to watch him campaign so hard for an Oscar. I'm like, it's just kind of an ick. And, you know, a couple of people were like, maybe don't go so in. So, because I was like, maybe no more interviews. And, you know, I don't really need to be doing interviews right now. Why am I taking shots at someone I barely know? I don't know at all. You know, and then all the Timothée Chalamet shit happened with the ballet and opera. And my friend's like, you're a witch. She's like, you said it and then he did it. She's like, and he proved to everyone why he's arrogant and an asshole. And I was like, no, now I feel bad for Timothée Chalamet because he dug such a hole for him. I'm like, but now I don't feel bad about what I said because it was true. It was too much. It's hard to see someone try so hard to tell people they deserve something. That's not humility in any way. You know what I mean? There's also that aspect of things where you just kind of want to be a little bit more gracious as you get older. Mm-hmm. I know I do. I don't want to expect things or demand things, you know? Like,
I've been noticing that too, that shift in my brain. I think I used to want to be the person who put the gavel down on people. You know what I mean? Like, you're doing the wrong thing and I'm going to like, and then as I get older, I'm like, where the fuck did I get off? Trying to like tell people they were so wrong for doing all these things, like, and people deserve grace. And I think as you get older, also, when you see these younger people doing the stupid shit, it's like, I was doing the same thing.
Yeah, like the unsolicited opinion. It's like, who asked you?
Yes.
No one asked me. I had to find out, you know? I'm like, a bunch of times. I'm like, no one has asked for my opinion about anything.
I had to wake up one day and realize that as well. Like, no one is asking for you to do all that.
Yeah.
There's still a way to be funny. But did you ever feel like in certain points of your career that you felt like you had to do that? Like even in the Chelsea Lately days, even in other days, like this pressure to be brash or this pressure to say that, like, you know what I mean? You start off by talking your shit and it's authentic. And then over time you build this image on it. Did you ever get to a point where you were like, I don't want to be just that, or I don't need to like share all that. Or
I mean, those are two questions. One, did I feel pressure to be that way? No, that was natural. Yes. That was innate. After, yes, like for a while, like, you know, at the end of my like run at Chelsea Lately, people couldn't understand why I would walk away from that show, which is now so many years ago. I think that ended in 2014 or something. I just was over myself, you know, in a way, like,
that's
I was like,
good, great way of putting
I'm just
it.
Not really interested in doing this right now. I need a break from myself. I'm on TV every single day. If the show was on 3 times a week, I was getting sick of hearing my name and I couldn't imagine how other people felt. And I just needed a break. And I was like, kind of where you are after you, you know, left your last podcast,
yeah.
like a kind of like a reset. You're like, well, okay, I want to do something different, which is this podcast for you. And I, for me, it was going to Netflix and starting a different kind of documentary series. And then I did my show there, which was, you know, kind of neither here nor there. Those shows don't really work on those platforms. So I was the first one to do that. And I did that for a couple of years and that was fun. But I wasn't feeling the same way I felt on Chelsea Lately, which was a fucking party. You know what I mean? Like, I was like, this isn't for me. I don't want to be tied to a desk. I want to travel the world. I don't want to be tethered to anything. I have so many appetites for so many different things. I want to buy a house in a different country. I want to speak a different language. I want to like learn more. And how do I do that while making money, you know?
Yeah.
So like, I'm glad all of my interests kind of relate to my career and I was able to make a career out of my interests.
What was the most fulfilling after that time? Like, what was the first thing you did when you realized that, you know what I mean? That made you feel like, wow, I'm doing this.
Well, I thought I was going to take like 2 years off. I'm like, I'm going to take 2 years off. I want to learn how to ski. That would be my most fulfilling thing. I spent 55 days skiing every single day. I went up to Whistler, Canada, which I now have a house there, but at the time I didn't. So I just hired a ski guide. I checked into the Four Seasons and I lived there for the winter and I paid some man who I ended up sleeping with. So then I had to start hiring a woman.
I had to do that too.
Yeah. It's when someone's in control of your body in any sort of way, in charge of keeping me safe, I'm attracted to them.
And I thought that fucking people was like the proper thank you, I think.
I also thought that.
And like, I had a big era as well where I was confusing friendship. Like, if a guy was just like a good friend to me, I was like, well, I have to fuck you.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like,
right. I kind of went through that too. That was like in my early 20s, I went through that phase. And that was a short phase because once I had sex with two of my friends, I was like, gross, gross, and gross.
Mm-hmm.
Not interested.
Do you have any, just overall, overarching, whether it comes to relationships or anything, is there anything, I guess this is a two-parter question too as well, any moments of humility, like where you were humbled crazy that stick out to you or regrets?
I mean, I was carried out of a party once, I think by, who was it? Chris Evans and Jeremy Renner. You mean sexual?
Whatever.
This wasn't sexual. But they carried me out of party one night because I was on this kind of new diet, like where you were eating 500 calories a day and you were taking shots and you're not supposed to drink. And I had like 2 drinks and just, it was over. I got carried out of a party that night and that was embarrassing. Like, I've never been like that. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not like that. I'm a drinker, but I don't lose my, like, I'm not a mess. I don't even think I would say I regret it because I liked what it did for me. I was like, you are not allowed to ever behave that way in public. Not that I hadn't been badly behaved at sometimes. Yeah, but that was drastic. So that was embarrassing and that gave me humility. And also like, way you're in this business, you're a public person, people are paying attention. Everyone there saw me, like it was a thing. But I think you meant sexually, right? Do I have regrets sexually? Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of guys that I just had sex with because I felt bad for. Or I was like, this will get me out of here quicker.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I'd have to really think about who those were. But also regrets about ending relationships in an acrimonious way.
Yeah.
I think is something that I did a lot when I was younger that I was like, that's not cool to do. Like, that's not what mature people do. Like, mm-hmm. I don't do that now. I would never yell or scream at someone.
How does a Chelsea breakup look now?
It's just like, it's a wrap. It's a wrap. And like, they know that at any minute, I mean, everyone I know or everyone I date knows that at any minute it could all be over.
And I really love that you present with that. I think it's normalizing and you also normalize that as well. You know what I mean? I found myself in situations like that, you know, where I'm leading people on. You've always been so good at that, presenting with a like, hey, this could be over at any second.
Yeah, I'm always like, listen, I need space. The guy I'm dating right now, one of the first things he said to me, we were in Antarctica on a boat. This was our first date, was Antarctica, okay? You know the story, we met in Vegas. We were gambling. I needed money. He had a bunch of chips. I asked him to borrow money. And then he ended up meeting me in Antarctica. So,
which is just so
weird. We were on a boat for 10 days, I think. 10 days. I was with my friend. He had his own room. But
I also feel like that's a lot for you, even just being on something in the middle of the ocean.
Yeah. But I'm at peace in the ocean and I'm at peace around ice. I love ice. The good kind, not the bad kind.
Yes.
The kind that's in Antarctica. Anyway, we went. And one of the first things he said to me, he said, is, you seem like somebody who needs a lot of space. And I know a lot of people on this boat, we're on a psychedelic cruise. Like, it was a conference about the studies of psychedelics.
Oh, okay, okay. I thought it was just something you made up so that you could...
Well, I mean, it was a work trip. So we were doing a lot of drugs and stuff and psychedelics, LSD, MDMA, all that kind of stuff. And one of the first things he said to me was, you seem like somebody who needs a lot of space. There's a lot of people here who want your attention. And I don't know you well, so I'm going to just circle around and I'll be around every hour. And when you're ready to hang out with me or want to hang out with me, just give me the look and I will come. If you want me to rescue you from a conversation, also give me that same look and I will come and get you out of the situation. And if you want to hang out, great. If you don't, I'll go do something. And I'm like, that's hot.
Yeah, that is, that like touched my heart. That feels like that is a person for you. Do you feel like in your, because you've also had a lot of like past public relationships. So obviously I know who I'm thinking about when I'm asking this question, but like, do you feel like a lot of other people didn't give you that? Like, is this a new thing?
Yeah. Well, no, I just didn't know how to ask for space. Like, it's funny when you say public relationship, like I've had some very public relationships, and most like the most recent one would be Joe Coy, which was very public and people were really cheering us on. And that was all sweet and very like, you know, nice to have that support from the public. And I had never really experienced that other than being like tabloid fodder, like with 50 Cent or some of my other boyfriends were just like, it wasn't like people were like cheering us on. So with that, it was a different thing. I remember like recently when it became public that I was dating this new guy, I was slipping pictures of him through my carousels on Instagram because I was like, I'm not making some declaration, but this is who I'm spending my time with. And I like to be representative of what's actually happening in my life. I'm not just going to post 15 pictures of myself in Istanbul without the person that I'm there with. That's weird. That's even weirder, I think, you know, but I'm also not saying.
I do think that's so weird. I know. That people
I know.
Do that.
And people are super private about that shit. But I was like, it's a, and somebody's like, I thought you weren't going to be public with anybody after Joe Coy. And I'm like, why? I don't care. Me and this guy will probably break up at some point too. And then I'll be posting about someone. Like, it's not that serious. About, like, I don't take it serious. Like, I don't have to protect, I have to protect my private life. I don't feel that way.
I'm the same way. I think I will always just unapologetically share whatever. Like, if God forbid McCoy and I ever broke up, I don't think I would be so scarred. I can't, though. I also just can't. I'm the type of person who can't shut the fuck up. I can't hold things close to myself. I want to share it to the people. But I also think that that's what builds such an authentic connection with the people who follow you and have been following you for so long. And you have that same thing.
Summer is one of those seasons where everyone expects you to be having the time of your life. You're traveling, making plans, saying yes to everything, trying to make every moment count. And while all of that can be really fun, it can also get overwhelming fast. And I feel like I've learned recently that taking time for yourself is just as important as all of the plans. Sometimes the healthiest thing you can do is slow down, check in with yourself, and figure out exactly what you need. That's one reason therapy can be so valuable. Therapy can help you better understand your needs, feel more confident setting boundaries, and create a version of summer that actually feels good for you. With over 30,000 licensed therapists, BetterHelp is the world's largest online therapy platform. They match you with a therapist based on your needs and preferences through a short questionnaire. And if you ever want to switch therapists, you can at any time. You don't have to say yes to everything this summer. Find support in therapy. Sign up and get 10% off at BetterHelp.com/Tana. That's BetterHelp.com/Tana. Thank you, BetterHelp, for sponsoring today's episode of Brand Safe.
Even at your show, just like seeing all of the people in the crowd who clearly had just have such a connection with you. They feel like you're their best friend and stuff. You are so good about the icks too. This was kind of an ADHD tangent, but one of the things you were talking about on stage that I was dying at, was it a guy that you were dating or was it your sister's boyfriend maybe who brought the suitcase on the beach?
Suitcase on the beach was the guy I was dating.
Yes.
He was dragging his suitcase along the sand.
Yeah.
And I couldn't believe it. Sorry. I was like, what the f*** is that? Like, have you ever been on vacation before? First of all, check your f***ing bag at the f***ing lobby, all right? And change your clothes. And don't f***ing walk on a beach with your suitcase. Yeah. I mean, it was one of them. I mean, it's an image I can't ever get out of my head. And I've never seen anyone do that. He also had traveled with hard-boiled eggs from a different country to Bermuda. That should be illegal. And if you are traveling with hard-boiled eggs, you should have to swallow them whole.
I've never understood that. Like, even the fact that they serve like fish on planes.
No,
I'm like, I don't care how good this fish is. Like, now this Airbus smells like pussy.
Yes, yeah,
and
yeah.
And it's awful to me.
I saw someone bring oysters on a plane once.
Yes.
Oysters.
Yes.
No, you can't bring oysters on a plane. That's a shellfish.
Even
where are you
going
to put the shells? I know, beef jerky smells so
like,
bad.
Like, why is beef jerky just sold in airports? Like, it's, I don't, I've eaten some beef jerky on a plane, but you know.
You have to be sensitive to the smell of what the food, of the food that you're eating.
I also really appreciate that you are a major advocate for airplane etiquette, okay? And I think over the years, there was drunk Tana definitely might have had some toes out on the plane, which I know
I believe
you
that you definitely had more than toes out,
yes,
on a plane, Tana.
Yes, dogs gripping.
Yeah, and yeah, and probably a little pussy and apple,
yes,
too.
For sure. And I've definitely refined that over time. And now, who I am now is, I can't believe the way people act in airports.
No. Like, and it's almost like when you, like, I sat next to this guy the other day, and he was so nice and clean and considerate, because mm-hmm. we were like both sitting next to each other. And he was just so well kempt. And I was like, thank you. Thank you. Like, it doesn't deserve a thank you, because it should just
be. The bar
be,
is in hell.
The bar is so low, but I'm like, thank you for not being a gross person.
You know what really gets me too? I pretty much, and this might be too far on the other side of the pendulum, but I will, unless I have a connection, and even then, I don't know, I will sit on the plane until everyone is like deboarded. I will be one of the last people off the plane. The people who the second that that bell dings, stand up and they're shuffling for their carry-on, they're knocking someone in the head for their carry-on. It's like, you realize you're then just gonna have to stand there and wait.
Yeah. Well, yeah, yeah. I'm one of those people, but that's because no. I'm at the front of the plane and I want to get off. I'm not fucking waiting around. Like, the ding ding, I get up and get it. But I'm not a fucking psycho about it. I just get up, and I always let everyone who's before me go. I'm not trying to rush in front of anyone. But, you know, I am flying, like, I'm not waiting for people to go. So we differ.
I can respect that. I can respect that. But are you a checked bag girl?
I don't like to check bags.
Well, then that makes sense.
No. Right, exactly. No, I don't like to check bags. On the occasion that I do check a bag, it's rare, and it's usually an international trip.
Yes.
I don't do that.
Because that's, I guess, where my head goes. I'm like, Susie is standing up rushing. You are just going to be waiting at the baggage
plane. You're right. But also, when you're sitting, like, this conversation is going to go in the wrong direction, because I'm going to talk about flying first class and but let's just be honest, that's what I'm doing. So when you're flying for, like, there's no reason for me to be sitting in 2B and wait for the entire plane to disembark.
I really do that.
What are you doing up there?
I think it's because I'm so fucking lazy that the idea of the fact that if I then I'm at 2B, so I'm getting off first, and then I'm a checked bag girl.
What are you doing so while everybody's deplaning?
Playing like Subway Surfer.
Oh.
I see. There's a lot of other things I have to work through. But I don't want to then just be waiting at the baggage claim.
No, I don't either. I don't want to be waiting at the baggage claim either.
And then the way people huddle around the baggage claim like it's a music festival performance, just because your knees are touching.
That is embarrassing. I agree with you that the way people behave around a baggage claim is embarrassing.
Like, your shins touching the
metal. Yeah, and then
when
you get to
gonna...
the point where it shoots out, like, you better be on high alert, because it's coming fast, and then you have to act fast.
And then people are hucking bags at other... It's just, I can't believe it sometimes. I think that's my favorite thing about you, is the way you talk about your pet peeves, though. Like, hearing you on a tangent about, like, things that you absolutely hate.
You know what else I hate? When you're on a flight and the pilot is screaming, like, the volume is way too loud, and it's like almost, you know, like a radio station that's not quite tuned in, and they're screaming, and it's like, lower the volume. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants to be talked to in that range.
I also don't know how many facts I want.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not interested either. And I also don't like when people clap when a plane lands.
Chelsea, I was just going to get started on that. It is my literal actual biggest pet peeve on planet Earth, the clapping when the plane lands. But also, I think that I really, when I developed that pet peeve, I really just hated everyone and everything.
Yeah.
And but for some reason it has stuck with me.
But it's stupid, because it's supposed to land.
Like, yes.
That's what's supposed to happen. Like, why is there, I mean, unless you land on the Hudson, like that guy did, Sully Sullenberger, then you can clap for the plane. Absolutely.
Yes.
Everyone should be clapping for that.
Or some extreme turbulence.
Yeah, I guess. But I mean, I don't know. And I'll say thank you to the pilot. I'm grateful, but I'm not clapping.
Yes.
Like,
me either.
Like,
ever.
Why?
There was this day, though, that I was on tour. I was flying from some city to some other city. We all land. I have in my noise-canceling headphones, right?
Yeah.
And through the noise cancel, I hear a round of applause, like we are at the Sphere Las Vegas.
Okay.
And I take off my noise-canceling headphones,
And out loud, and this is on me because I didn't need to go all out loud, you know? I go, what? Like, why are we all, like, it was a perfectly normal flight. It was a short flight. I was like, what is up with the clapping? I vocalize my disdain. And the man next to me turns to me and says, it's Veterans Day. And they're clapping for our veterans. I'm a veteran. Like, he keeps going. And I can just tell this man is absolutely seething. And I'm me too. Like, I had blonde 24-inch extensions. And I'm going like, why are you high?
You're like, what is Veterans Day?
And that was, I learned to stop vocalizing my disdain. Because it's
That's why the only like negative thing about noise cancellation headphones. But I do love when I can pair my noise cancellation headphones with my phone and it actually fucking works, because I'm technologically a little bit on the, you know.
You wrote about that in Life Will Be the Death of
Me. The noise canceling headphones are dangerous for that reason. You know what I mean? Because sometimes you're like, it's like anything with headphones. Like, you start talking more loudly than you would with them out. Because
I had to quit.
Yeah.
I had to quit for that reason. Yeah, they made me a worse person overall, mm-hmm. and I had to adjust for my environment for sure. But I feel you so hard on being so technologically like inept. Like, you always, even just like living in a house where you don't understand anything.
Yeah.
Has that gotten better for you?
I've gotten more patient about it. It still doesn't work. I believe it's my dead mother fucking with me. I believe my mother is like, ha, 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 ha. That's something she would do. She would be like, oh, I'm going to make sure your blinds don't all go up at the same time. Or I'm going to make sure that the program who's doing your Sonos music only plays in one room and then turns on and off in all the other rooms for no fucking reason. And that's just like the bane of my existence. So I've learned to better deal with it and have more patience with technology. So I would say I've improved, but it's not by a large margin.
Honestly, though, I needed to hear that. And maybe I should start also writing it off to the dead, because I have a very similar problem. And my patience is, I'm not the most patient person.
Yeah, I'm not patient. Yes. Like, if I want something done, I want it done yesterday.
And speaking of wanting something done and wanting something done yesterday, you have had the house from hell.
Robert F. Kennedy Jr., everybody, our director of Health and Human Services. I bought his fucking house, and it feels like I bought his house. It's the same. The house was in the same shape as the Department of Health and Human Services for about 4 years. And I finally moved in. You were there. You were one of my first guests in my podcast room there. Thank you. It is a beautiful house now. So now I need to break it in and give it some good vibes, because the vibes are missing.
But it was a long process. I feel like every time I was texting you, you were like, guess what's happening today type of thing.
Yeah,
and just people.
And also getting in a victim mode, like I would get really upset and emotional about my house, and no one could understand why I was getting so upset and emotional about my house. And at one point, I think one of my cousins said to me, like, maybe you should go see your therapist. And I'm like, to talk about my fucking house? And then I did. I was like, okay, well, I was out of ideas, and my coping mechanisms were off, and I ended up finding out my hormones were completely off. Yeah. And that's also a major aspect of it. When I went to talk to him about it, he really did sit down with me and explain, like, of course you're upset. You're rudderless. Like, you have no home. You're constantly bouncing around from friend's house to rental house to friend's house to rental house with my dog, da da da. And he's like, you have every right. You're like a, you know, like a hot air balloon. You're constantly traveling, and then you come home and you have nowhere to land. Yes, that's destabilizing. And I was like, thank you. Like, I needed, like, it's like a baby. I needed someone to hear me cry.
Yes.
You know,
when you say your coping mechanisms were off, that's such an interesting thing to me. What is an off coping mechanism for Chelsea Handler?
When I can't when I can't do my day. Yeah. Like, I'm like, cancel everything. I just don't have it in me. I can't do it. Like, I'm too emotional, like, you know, crying, stuff like that. I'm not a big crier. So when I can't control my emotions, I'm like, oh God, you're a mess.
Yeah.
And like, you shouldn't be out and about. You shouldn't be in public.
What is your go-to coping mechanism?
Like, alcohol. If I have to go to a party and I don't want to go, or I have to go do something I don't want to go, I'm like, all right. Last night I went to a thing. I did want to go, but I was just I've just been on the move. I've been pretty busy. So I was like, let me go. It's on my way home. I had done Kimmel, so I was in glam. I'm like, I should go. But I just went, and I was like, I'm not going to stay for dinner. I'm just going to have, you know, I had one drink, and it was wonderful. I was there for like an hour and 45 minutes. Mm. I put in my time and I got the fuck out of there. But if I didn't have alcohol, I don't think I would go.
Yes.
Like when I'm in that state, I can go to a dinner and not have a drink, but when I'm in that state and I'm tired and I need to power up, that is my friend.
I understand completely. That's why I'm a hermit now.
Yeah, right.
And truly.
Right.
And finding that balance again is so hard because it is. It's lubricant for doing shit you might not want to do.
Yeah. And weed, like I love weed. I love smoking weed and that. But that
weed furthers the hermit.
It doesn't serve the same purpose. Weed is like for when I get home.
Yes. Are you a social high?
Yeah, I could be socially high. I mean, I can pretty much be high wherever. And if I need to be home, I can do that. And I'll take an edible. I take an edible almost every night, you know, or a sleeping pill. It's one or the other, a Xanax or
an
edible. Are
you Ambien?
No, like, Xanax.
Okay. Yeah.
Xanax for me. I know Xanax is an upper for you. Yeah. In some weird fucking other, like, I don't know what other, what's it called? Like, I mean, not a matrix. What other quantum physics world you're living in that Xanax is an upper?
It makes me clean my house and like organize things.
It means your chromosomes are off.
Yeah. So, well, we've been known
because,
that.
But Xanax for me is just like, I get a great night's sleep.
Yeah. That's great.
When I don't drink, obviously, I have my best nights of sleep, you know? So those are like, that's when you get quality sleep.
And do you get hungover?
Yeah. If I go off.
Yeah.
But I mean, but I'm pretty, you know, like I have a pretty tough constitution. Like no matter what, I get up at 7 o'clock in the morning and wake up. It doesn't matter what happened the night before.
No way.
Yeah.
And do you like if you are feeling like shit, do you have your remedies?
Yeah. Electrolytes and my.
So you're not a hair of the dog girl.
No. Yeah. In the morning, drink alcohol. You mean to get
well,
up?
Well, I mean, I was a hair of the dog girl.
Oh, in the morning?
Yeah.
Oh, no, I don't do that. No. I mean,
that's good.
No. I mean, if I'm on vacation, maybe, but not the morning really. I always exercise first.
Yeah.
I like to like get going, get my body moving, and then I'm not opposed to having a drink or something at lunchtime, but no, not in the morning. That doesn't appeal to me.
That's
even
great.
When I'm hungover. Yeah.
I want your master list ranking of substances.
Okay.
From worst to best.
Well, alcohol has been a very good friend to me my whole entire life, and we have an understanding. So I'm going to say alcohol is number one, because if you took away everything else, I don't know that I think I would miss alcohol the most. Even if I could have weed, it's still not the same, because alcohol gives me a little pep in my step. Like,
yes.
It gives me the energy that I don't, if I don't have the energy. Weed, I could go without for the rest of my life. Yeah. I love being stoned. I love edibles. I love smoking a joint. I really can't smoke that much weed because of my throat. I have like, it just end up clearing my throat for days when I smoke a joint, which is really what I love to do. But that also makes me stupid when I abuse it. MDMA is my favorite drug. It's a tie between LSD and MDMA, microdose of both. I definitely have noticed as I've gotten older, like mushrooms used to be a favorite of mine. I don't love mushrooms the way I used to. When I'm on mushrooms, I believe everyone's wearing a wig. And the last time I was on mushrooms, we stayed up all night with my girlfriends. We were on this camping trip. Well, it's not a camping trip. We were away. We stayed up and we were having, you know, like the mushroom laughter, which is so fun. But we woke up in the morning, or we were up in the morning when the sun came up, and we heard the birds chirping, and we started bird watching.
Yeah.
Like, literally bird watching. And someone got out a bird watching book. And I'm like, no.
At all.
This is a very slippery slope into wearing Velcro sneakers. Like, I will not be bird watching. And if this is where mushrooms are taking us, then I'm out.
Yes.
So I got off the mushroom train, and I'm not in. There was kind of like also like a nausea, like a little slight nausea with mushrooms that I was noticing.
I agree with that.
And I don't like that. I don't know if my physiology is changing as I'm getting older, but I try to respect the drug and respect my body. And if it's not hitting me right, then I take some time off.
I agree with that. Honestly, I had the same thing with mushrooms, really, where I like love them so much. And then the last time I took them, I started thinking everyone was like almost like sleeper cell spies.
Oh,
I think like
yeah.
I started to get really like paranoid on mushrooms that like people's intentions weren't good. And then I'm a cunt. So like I'm just being a bitch to people who I love,
which
so
is not
much.
What mushrooms are about at all.
Yes.
Right.
I didn't even know. I mean, I guess maybe I was in a dark place, but I've been scared to try them again. I have Coachella coming up, and I'm debating, because I haven't done Molly in a long time. I haven't done MDMA in a long time. And I had a big phase with it.
What about LSD? Have you tried microdosing LSD? It's not crazy. It's like a little bit. It's a lot like mushrooms.
I haven't ever tried microdosing it.
Yeah.
Okay. So maybe that would be a different world.
It's not scary at all. You don't hallucinate. You're not out of your tree.
Yeah.
Like I could take 3 or 4 microdoses in a day.
Yes.
And if you were to do it, I would say take a half and then you take another half. You see
but is
how
a half a
you.
Tab really microdosing?
A half a tab?
Yeah. Yeah. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, it's a microdose. It's like one tab is not even, you would have to take 4 or 5 of those for a full hit of acid.
Oh, okay, I get what you're saying.
So it's a fraction.
Yeah, I guess I live in this thought process that it would make me see the Hat Man, you know, that I would like even a microdose. Because that's how it was for me when I would take it.
Yeah, yeah. That is not what people think associate it with. Like what it was years and years ago is not what it is today.
Yes.
It literally is like, for me, I would describe is like, if you're tired, if you're not feeling it, it kind of levels you up. It gives you enthusiasm. It's like an exclamation point. So like if I go skiing, we'll take LA and you're just like, it's even better than your regular day of skiing because you're noticing the trees and you're outside and you're like, this is beautiful. And you like appreciate nature. So it's like really good for activities and it's really good for non-activities. Like I couldn't recommend LA more. I think that might be my favorite drug.
I think it is in this, at least in this time of your life,
yeah,
because of how forward you are about it. Even the story in Mallorca of you giving it to the couple and them.
I've given a lot of this LSD away to people.
Yes.
And I don't get any bad reviews.
Do you have any non-negotiable, like, I don't do this, I never will? Obviously, I assume, like, have you ever tried like heroin or meth?
I don't think I've tried heroin.
I feel the same way. I'm like, I think I have it.
I'm not positive about anything I've done. Do you know what I mean?
I agree 1,000%.
Like if someone came forward and they were like, you did it with me, I'd be like, okay. But I mean, I definitely didn't do it with anyone. Like if I tried it, it was because I didn't know I was having it. But I'm not into those kinds of drugs. And I'm not into cocaine. Like that grosses me out at this point. Like I did that in my 20s and 30s and that was enough.
Were you an oversharer on cocaine?
Yes. Who isn't?
Yeah, I guess that's true.
I mean, everybody overshares on cocaine. I mean, people act like idiots.
Well, some people I feel like can just like eat an invisible sandwich in the corner on, you know, like they will shut up and their jaw is swinging and like, you know, but I just was like, do you want to hear about when I was 7? You know, and it's like, no one does. Like I was
Right. I definitely had many nights staying up with girlfriends in my closet doing.
And why is it always
and just talking, not having any recollection about what we talked about.
Yes.
Just hot messes.
That's good. So now would you ever do it again?
I wouldn't say I would never do anything because every time I say that, something happens where I end up doing it. Like I've said, I'll never get married. And I'm like, I'm not planning on getting married, but I probably will because I've said I'm never going to do it. So I just don't say I'm never going to do anything. I have no desire to do coke. But who knows? Maybe if it's available and someone's doing a line and I'm like, yeah,
I think you'd have to be in like Europe or the UK.
I find that to be true of cigarettes and coke.
Yes.
That's for Europe.
I agree. I do feel like as you're saying, like, maybe I'll get married again or whatever. Like, it is interesting. It's so cool to see you in just something so happy. I really like Cowboy for you.
Oh, thank you. I was just talking to Cowboy on my way over. But you said married again, so I just want to make sure everyone knows I've never been married.
Ever?
No, I've never been married.
Why do I feel like you... I'm not saying that there was some long-lasting marriage there, but I assume there was a shotgun and then a null.
No. Were you married to Jake Paul?
And I ask myself that question every day.
You
right?
were.
Too.
I found that out when I was said to Cowboy on the way over. I go, oh, do you know Tana? Mange. And he was like, he goes, let me look her up. He goes, oh, was she married to Jake Paul?
I would write it off as fake.
Yeah, well, it sounded like you got married in Vegas and then got an annulment. Is that what happened?
Well, no. We planned this, orchestrated. I think that was a time of my life where I was... view, attention, like engagement, eyes on me, happy. And I didn't care what cost I had to get it at. You know what I mean? We were scheming on attention and eyes and whatnot.
That's interesting for you to admit. I'm trying to think back of when I was acting like that. I'm sure there was a time.
I did really love him. Like, it was a very weird, interesting thing in that way where I think I got married, no pun intended, to this, like, fake idea.
Right.
With this person at the same time, which was just a whole mindfuck that ended up taking me years to, like, work through.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
How long did you guys get married for?
I don't know. I want to say the actual, like, online... Well, we were never married on paper. It was more just this, let's make the world think that we are.
Oh, I see. So you weren't married.
But, like... had a wedding and like did all of those things.
Oh, okay.
You know?
Oh, wow.
Yes. And live streamed it to the public. Like, kill yourself.
Wow.
Kill yourself.
Oh, that's embarrassing.
It really, and wow. It took me so long to work through that, you know, to just be like, what the hell happened there? And even now I don't think I'll ever be able to fully put the pieces together on it.
Oh,
you know?
God. It's funny though that you thought I was married in a shotgun wedding just because you had been.
That is so true. I don't know. You're just, and I love that about you. Like, you know, that's why I've always been so inspired by you, because you're wild and you do what you want to do and you never know what you're going to get from Chelsea in the best way. You know?
Yeah, I'm like, wild for sure. Yes. I'm a wild animal for sure.
But I think that you are the testament to so many women like me that you can be wild and crazy, but you can also run a business and a tight ship and go achieve your dreams and win and make it out of circumstances that you were born into all by yourself and from being authentically yourself.
Thank you. Thank you.
And it is, I always say, like, if I can end up being a tenth of the woman that you are in the end of my career, I will be so satisfied with myself. You are the number one inspo across this. I can't wait to start doing stand up. You're the number one inspo. It's funny. I always ask you for advice on that. And you're kind of like, just do it.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm not big on giving advice about stand-up because it is so personal to each performer. And it really is like everyone has such different styles of stand-up that the only advice you can give is just to get out there and get on stage. Like, I'm about to go do two sets tonight at the Ice House in Pasadena, not because I need to practice, just because it's a good muscle to flex. It's good to get out there and do your thing. Like, I didn't for a long time do local spots because I'm always on tour and I'm on tour right now. So when I take a break or I have downtime, I like to have some downtime, but I don't have any downtime during this break anyway. I'm recording podcasts, my own, this, yours, Kimmel, blah, blah, blah. But I just think, like, when you're good at something, do it.
Yeah.
And to get good at something, you have to do it. So there isn't a lot of advice to give around that. It's just like anything you want to go after, like, you're going to start getting results. It's like going to the gym. You know, as soon as you start going to the gym, you're going to start feeling better about your body. You're going to start getting stronger. I mean, my style of stand-up can be completely different than, you know, half of the people that are on stage tonight. Some people are telling stories. Some people are just telling jokes. Some people are like pretending to be somebody that they're not, or they have a persona. And so I don't think there's a lot of advice to give other than get stage time.
Do you feel like your style has evolved over time? And are there things that you used to do, you know, in sets or on stage or ways you used to be that you now no longer are? Or you look back and you get the ick a little, or you're
I always get the ick when I look back at my stuff. I mean, I can barely watch my own set now, you know? Yeah, I used to yell and scream and be a lot angrier. Like, that's a part of my personality that was like part of my stage presence and my real personality. It was like something that I had to, like, you know, work through or outgrow, I guess. You know, I'm not angry like I used to be. Like, when I was young and kind of like coming up, I was just like cursing all the time. And, you know, cursing is fine, but you don't need to overdo it. Or yelling, I don't like that. Or talking really, really fast, I do that a lot, you know. And so I'm mindful of that. But yeah, like, you just refine, I think, as you age. And I took a long break from stand-up for like 6 years, and like, that really gave me pause, because when I went back, I was scared of stand-up. I was like, oh God, what if my audience isn't there? And what if I'm not as good as I was when I left? And I was kind of tiptoeing around it because that's how I started my career. And I kind of wanted to get back in. And I didn't know why I had taken a break, but I did at the end. I was like, oh, I just got freaked out by it. Like, yeah. I was like, you know, I wanted to be honest with myself. So I think you outgrow your bad qualities, like, or your qualities that don't work for you.
Yeah,
you kind of shed them.
That is like, and obviously I always loved your anger. I ate it up every time.
Yeah, okay. I like when women are angry too.
Yeah, so much. Where do you think yours derived from? Like, where do you think that it came from? Or were you born with it?
I think I was very pissed about my brother dying and my father kind of, you know, that stuff. I think it was like delayed grief and anger at not being seen or valued in the way that I valued or saw myself. Mm-hmm. Like, a lot of people suffer from not having enough confidence in themselves. I had so much confidence in myself that I couldn't believe other people didn't think the same of me. So I was very frustrated. Like, I was like, I had like arrested, like, discovery syndrome, where I was like, doesn't everybody know how talented I am? Yeah. Why can't everybody see it? You know, that kind of anger. Yeah. And kind of anger at people who didn't see things the way that I saw them, mm-hmm. which is very solipsistic mm-hmm. and not mature. Like, eventually you have to get to a place where you understand that people are different and they don't see things the way you see them. And not everybody's going to handle a situation in the way that you want them to, or the way that you would handle it, which is something I'm still dealing with. You know what I mean? Like, I still, like, when I look at someone mishandle something, or I'm like, I wouldn't do it that way, or I'm not doing that, you know? And it's like, it doesn't matter how you want to do it or what I think.
I honestly, I went through a big phase of that recently, especially in going, so where I think you start to like notice a lot of people just doing stupid shit. I was more aware in my own life, and I'm noticing the people I care about making so many mistakes, or making mistakes I've made and learned from, but then not handling it the right way. Even if I ever like become a parent and decide that, I notice that like when people aren't doing something the way that I want them to do it and see for them, I resort to rage about it.
Yeah.
You know? And what, like, what helped you work through that? What helped
therapy?
You? Yes.
I had to go to therapy and find out that what I was angry about and what I thought I was angry about was not what I was angry about, you know? So therapy was really helpful. Like, I mean, it's just such a, like, it's a trope, but it's a trope because it's true. Like, it's like, it's very cliche. Like, I turned 40 and I went to therapy and I got really serious. I was like, all right, this is all I'm doing for 2 years so that I don't have to do this for 10 years.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to get so good at this that I don't have to see this man for the rest of my life, which is exactly how it turned out, you know? Because eventually I got sick of him too. I was like, all right, that's enough. I got it. But it's like how I felt about skiing. I wanted to become a good skier. So I spent like 2 years skiing as many days in a row as I could. And then I was like, okay, I got it. And now I'm good.
You were even saying that today about the establishment of a pattern and following up and continuously showing up.
Yeah.
Consistently showing up to a pattern, even if it's something you don't want to do.
Yeah. It's like working out. Like the only reason I do that is because I know the results are worth it. You know, I don't want to get up and work out every single day, or I didn't start out that way, but you set a pattern and you're like, this is what a professional person is going to have to do. Like if I want to achieve like the level of like, and maintain the level of lifestyle that I'm allowed to lead and pay for it and function and do all of the things I do, then I have to have my shit together to a certain degree. You know, I can't accomplish all this by just partying and doing drugs all the time.
Yeah.
You know, but I'm going to try and do as much as I can and also accomplish this. Do you know what I mean? That's how I feel about life. Like, I'm getting after it.
Did you ever feel like that about writing? Like, in all of the times of writing your books, were you just inspired through and through across it, sitting there ready to write? Or did you feel like you had to kind of show up consistently and force yourself, I guess, at times?
There were times where I felt both things, where I felt bursts of creative energy and bursts of creativity. Mm-hmm. And then times where you're just like, I have nothing to say. I have a huge book deal. I have a book due. What am I going to do? How am I going to say it? What, you know, is this a story? Is this a story? Should I make this up? Or what am I going to do here? I'd go on a trip to get a story. So I felt both. I felt both ends of that. I think something that I've learned is like, there is a time to like plant and then there's a time to like harvest. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And those two things are not always available to you. So like sometimes you just have to gather the information. Like sometimes you're just not doing anything. You're not creating. You just are having a time out.
Chelsea Handler, I truly hope that this is the first of many times I get to see you on the Brand Safe podcast.
Oh my God. And anytime, baby. Time.
And I can't wait to just be sillier and stuff. Today was one of those ones though, where again, even across this podcast, just how inspired I am by you and your trajectory and your reinvention and all of the things that you've done. I wanted to sit down and have a conversation that would mean the most to me to start on this new journey and this chapter of my life. And it's all downhill from here, quite frankly.
No, it's not. You're an inspiration to so many people and I love it. And I'm so happy to be here for your first podcast. I love you.
And I fucking love you. And just thank you so much for all of the like pseudo, just like big sistering and looking out for me and checking in on me and inviting me to things where I'm sure you could have Jimmy Kimmel at the blackjack table in Vegas, but you're inviting me and my gay friends and taking care of them and just everything. You are so amazing. And you guys, the last time I saw her before today was at the High and Mighty tour. And it was one of the funniest, most incredible nights of my life. If you don't get your there, you're missing out.
You can get tickets at chelseahandler.com.
Yes,
I'm just about to announce, or no, I just did announce a ton more dates. So yes, we have lots of dates coming up. Find a city near you and come out for a good time. Yes, baby.
And I will be at a few, sneaking in through the back in a disguise, stalking her. So come hang out.
There's no reason to wear a disguise.
Yeah, you'll
by
know
the way
me.
With how often you change your hair and all of your shit, you don't need a f-ing disguise because it's hard to recognize you. Every time
tone.
I see you look completely different. I know you're like 8 shades darker than the last time I saw you.
My skin
this
tone?
Is Rachel Dolezal, everybody.
I've had a different skin tone literally every week this week, and that's going to be the scandal I'm apologizing for next week on the next episode of Brand Safe. Thank you, Chelsea Handler.
Thank you.